back to the bin.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spataro, and as has been the case most weeks, more weeks than not of late, I am joined by one of my fellow freaks, Mr. David Pascarella. How are you, Dave?
Good morning. I'm dazed and confused. Thank you for having me.
You're dazed and confused.
Dazed and confused.
So this is the first time I've been truly excited about movies coming out, I think, since Endgame. I don't think there's been anything that really got me excited since then. There's been things that have intrigued me. There's things that I said, oh, I want to see that when it comes out. But as we record this, we are at the end of June. So I think this is going to post more like the end of July. But as we're sitting here right now, next week we have a new Jurassic Park movie coming out. That has me interested. That doesn't have me excited. The week after that, we have a new Superman movie coming out, which has me excited. And then at the end of the month, we have a new Fantastic Four movie, which has me excited. I've already bought my tickets for Superman, and I plan on pre-buying my tickets for Fantastic Four. And I plan on figuring out a day to drag my wife to Jurassic Park, but that one's not going to be any kind of advance purchase. That's going to be when it fits in. But, you know, we already did a Superman score episode, and then, again, I don't know how this is going to play out time-wise. This may be before or after, but we're doing a second score episode for Superman with Scott that's going to tie into the Legends of the Justice Society podcast, and I've already recorded a third one with Blake PT that's going to come probably mid to late August, which is yet another Superman score episode. So we are definitely up to our necks in Superman score episodes, but it's time to do a fantastic score. Get it? Get the pun? Huh? Pretty clever.
Yeah, I see what you did with that. Yes.
So now, when it comes to Superman, I take a backseat to Dave. Dave has far superior knowledge of Superman than I do, and I think Scott does as well. I love Superman. I've always been into the character, but I think I haven't been the devotee that they have been. When I actively started collecting comics, Spider-Man was number one, and then the Fantastic Four was number two. They were the second. Those two books were kind of on the top shelf every month. When they came out, those were the must reads for me. And then everything else, I enjoyed everything else, but they were secondary to those two books. So Fantastic Four is one of my keystone books. And Dave, I don't think you are quite as aligned to that team as I am.
I mean, you know, my first exposure to them was those old cartoons that used to run on Channel 5 or whatever. The really crappy ones from the 60s. I don't even think Johnny Storm was in them.
That's from the late 70s.
From the 70s. Herbie the Robot was in there.
Yes. In the 60s, they had a cartoon. I think, you know, it was one season, like 20 episodes, and it was I think it was Hanna-Barbera, if I remember correctly. And it was, you know, it was okay. It was not really, really high end, but it was better than the Grant Ray Marvel Superheroes cartoons that just kind of had still figures with, you know, with words coming out that they would just move the picture. These were actually animated, and they did a lot of the real stories. They did the Coming of Galactus. They did Dr. Doom stories. They had a bunch of them, and that was actually my first entry into the Fantastic Four before I started collecting comics. Then in the 70s, they came out with the Fantastic Four comic that had Herbie the Robot and No Human Torch. And, you know, the rumor was that that they didn't want to have the Human Torch on there because they were afraid of children setting themselves on fire to try and be like him.
Yep, that's what
I've heard. That is not really the case, that there was more of a rights issue that was going on, but I don't know the true background of that particular
What could the
story.
Rights have been? It was too similar to the original Human Torch?
I don't know. I honestly don't know. But I've just heard that that wasn't the case, that it wasn't that they were afraid of kids lighting themselves on fire.
Based on their track record, though, that wouldn't surprise me.
Well, they did have an issue when John Byrne took over the Fantastic Four. They did have an issue where a kid idolized the torch and did that. And the torch was feeling mighty guilty afterwards about, you know, just the fact that his existence led to this occurring. But be that as it may, again, I've loved the Fantastic Four from the start, and they have had some interesting developments over the years. When I first started collecting comics, Sue Storm was not a member, or Sue Richards was not a member of the team. Reed had to use some sort of a, you know, one of his inventions on their son Franklin, because Franklin's innate powers were going a little nuts, and he, in order to stop there from being an explosion, he had to induce Franklin into a coma.
What number did you start reading with? Like, whereabouts?
It was I don't know the exact number off the top of my head, but I think it was around 144, 145, somewhere around there.
Okay.
And the story that I'm talking about, I think, was like around 139 that she abandoned the group. And they actually had Medusa as a member of the group for a little while. And they've also had times where, you know, they've had other temporary replacements. I guess the most notable was would be in the Burn era when She-Hulk became a member replacing the Thing. But there is an interesting correlation there in my mind with the books we're going to cover today, because, again, Medusa was a member during that short period of time when Sue was out. And the buildup to the story that we're going to cover today is the story starts with the Fantastic Four having lost their powers because they were involved in an explosion in the issue before. The explosion was caused by the Frightful Four, which was obviously their counterparts. And one of the Frightful Four at that time was Medusa. It was Medusa, Sandman, the Wizard, and the Trapster. And then shortly after this period that we're going to cover these two books, they introduced the Inhumans, and all of a sudden Medusa became not really a bad guy anymore, and eventually became a hero and an ally to the team. But, it's just interesting that that kind of developed. I don't recall. I would have to reread the very first issue that Medusa appeared in and see what they said, if anything, about what her backstory was, because that could be interesting.
Right. Yeah, I've read the first 50.
All new to you? Oh, you have read the first
50. I've read the first 50 when that Marvel Unlimited first came out. I had a subscription, and my plan was to read through the whole history, you know, from like Fantastic Four 1 all the way through. I made it 50 issues.
That's not a bad run.
No, it wasn't.
And in my opinion, you walked away just at the point where Jack Kirby kind of reached the peak of his powers. The issues we're going to cover today are about a year before 50. And he was showing signs of it, but hadn't yet done it, because, you know, there was a house style for comics before the house style that eventually developed in the 60s and 70s. And that house style was a little bit more cartoony, for lack of a better word. Right. And for about the first 30 issues or so, Kirby kind of went more with that house style. And then it started to develop more and more. And by the time we got to the Galactus Saga, which was 47, 48, and 49, I really feel like that was when he finally hit his stride and was just putting out great stuff.
Yeah, I think I stopped because DC had come out with a platform and I went over to that one. I wasn't going to have two going.
Yeah, I have so many different streaming things going and subscriptions and monthly payments, and it's just insane. So,
and there's nothing to watch.
Well, it's the old Bruce Springsteen song. What is it? 57 channels and nothing is on.
There you go.
Yeah. I've been playing a game on my phone, and it's kind of a Tetris like game, but it's not Tetris. And it's not the same gameplay, but that's the closest thing I can align it to. And then they have a thing, you know, do you want to pay to eliminate the ads? And it said $4.99. And I thought, well, you know what, for $5, if I can get rid of ads, that's fine. Then I saw it's $5 a month.
Yeah, okay, thank you very much.
It's like, you know what, by the time I'd get through 2 months, I'm going to be onto some different game anyway. You know, it's definitely not worth my while.
And then you'll forget to cancel it, and they'll keep billing you $5 and $5 and $5.
I find that happens with the kids a lot. we keep getting bills and we say, why am I being billed for this? Oh, I signed up for that, you know, 2 years ago. Do you use it? No. Well, call up and cancel it now. But, you know, it's just the life we lead. So Dave asked me which books we should cover. He left it up to me. And I said, let's do Fantastic Four 39 and 40, which is a fairly well-known story arc where they lost their superpowers and Daredevil aligns himself with them and helps them as Dr. Doom attacks them. So I'm going to do number 39 and then Dave is going to do number 40. Dave, would you prefer to each do our synopsises and then just discuss them in bulk or do each issue separately?
I think we could do it all together. It's one story.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking maybe it might be worth just doing it together. So starting with Fantastic Four 39, which has a cover date of June of 1965 and a release date of March 11th of 1965 and a cover price of 12 whole cents. The cover, which is credited to Jack Kirby, Chick Stone, Wally Wood, Stan Goldberg, and Sam Rosen, shows an iconic image of the Fantastic Four being led by Daredevil. But something isn't quite right, because it features the Thing, but Ben Grimm is behind the group in his human form, working some type of remote control. Behind them is an image of Dr. Doom looming over the city. The caption reads, "A blind man shall lead them," which is the title of the story. The credits are story by Stan Lee, drawn by Jack Kirby, inked by Frank Ray, who is actually Frank Giacoya, and Daredevil was reportedly inked by Wally Wood, and lettered by Artie Simic. The story opens with our foursome being rescued by a submarine as they floated in a raft following an explosion caused by the Frightful Four. And if you're looking close enough, you'll see that Ben Grimm is in his human form, just like on the cover. They're brought to the infirmary where Reed has a nightmare of the situation that brought them to this point, and it gives the readers a chance to catch up on what occurred. The following morning, the team is morose over the fact that they've lost their powers. Once they return home, Reed starts to research a way to get their powers back, and we're given a Kirby pop art photo/drawing combination. Reed comes up with mechanical substitutions for their powers in the form of suits for Sue and Johnny, extendable arms for Reed, and a remote control robotic Thing. They all require practice to properly use these faux powers, but they're determined for fear of being attacked while they're powerless. The scene changes to Latveria, where Dr. Doom is seated in his throne as a magician attempts to entertain him, to no avail. He attempts to demonstrate hypnosis on the good doctor, but realizes that Doom is already subject to a hypnotic command. You see, in Fantastic Four Annual Number 2, he was hypnotized to believe that he had destroyed the Fantastic Four. But now that spell has been lifted, and Doom swears that only the death of the Fantastic Four can avenge this insult. With that, Doom enters a gyroscopic aircraft that he invented and heads for a confrontation in New York. Back in New York, blind attorney Matthew Murdock meets with our heroes and senses that they're not the same as they had been. The reason for the meeting is to establish a plan for Reed's scientific notes and their charitable foundation if something happens to them. Almost immediately, there's an explosion followed by stun blasts, which Reed surmises that they're being toyed with. In the confusion, Matt Murdock dons his costume as Daredevil and quickly aids the Torch, whose flames have been extinguished by a stun blast. The group spies Doom's craft atop the Baxter Building, and he feels the need to project a sky sign that says, "The Fantastic Four shall now die by the hand of Dr. Doom." Since he's seized control of their headquarters, his first action is to attack them with a Fantasticar. They manage to elude that threat, but Doom isn't done. He next makes use of Reed's supersonic air displacer vortex machine, which can generate the force of a dozen hurricanes, and it turns the condemned warehouse where the FF and Daredevil are to a mass of rubble. Daredevil leads the group out through the smoky rubble. Reed indicates that they need to separate. He and Daredevil throw gas cylinders into the vortex to shatter it. Doom is watching from afar and reasons that the team is powerless. He next sends force beam projectiles to them, which is akin to a guided missile that locks onto its target's heartbeat. Daredevil uses the cord from his billy club to lasso it and smash it. Daredevil decides to draw Doom's fire, and Doom sends a fragment grenade, which he barely evades. Meanwhile, our powerless team each start to make their way to the Baxter Building for a confrontation with Doom in the next exciting issue. And that issue will be covered by my good friend, Mr. David Pascarella.
Picking up where my good friend left off, we have Fantastic Four number 40 from July 1965. We have a beautiful cover with now a fully powered Fantastic Four battling Dr. Doom. We see Daredevil being held up by Dr. Doom as he blasts away at the Four. A flying Johnny Thunder is shooting firebolts, and a fully thingified Ben Grimm is trying to move, it looks like, this staircase from this issue, carrying an unconscious Sue Storm and a fully stretchable Reed Richards. Boy, have we made a jump from the last issue. And we've got a massive blurb on the cover, The Battle of the Baxter Building, and it features Dr. Doom, more diabolical, more deadly than before. Don't miss the Thing's epic hand-to-hand fight with the desperate Doom. Boy, as far as advertising, I don't see how you'd be able to walk by the spinner rack and not pick this up for a whopping 12 cents. That's like a steal, right? A steal. The cover was by Jack Kirby and Frank Giacoya, and our issue is entitled, Surprise! The Battle of the Baxter Building. This is written and edited by the immortal Stan Lee, penciled by Jack Kirby, and inked by Vince Coletta. Picking up from the last issue, the splash page promises that the Fantastic Four will be facing their most desperate fight. A fight that will take its place beside the battles of Waterloo, Gettysburg, and Dunkirk. Aided by Daredevil, the powerless Fantastic Four attempt a counterattack against Dr. Doom to retake the Baxter Building. Having realized the Fantastic Four are powerless, Doom gloats to himself that as long as he holds the Baxter Building, he can use Reed's own weapons against them and pick them off at his leisure. Using Reed's remote-controlled TVI, Doom quickly locates the Fantastic Four. Before Doom can launch his attack, Daredevil's radar sense detects Doom's probe. With lightning speed, Daredevil adjusts his billy club and gets off a shot, destroying the TVI. Reed concludes that their only chance is to get into the Baxter Building, so he can get a hold of his electronic stimulator. Well named. Daredevil springs into action to act as a decoy for the Fantastic Four. As Daredevil taunts Doom, Johnny and Sue commandeer a taxi cab. They pick up Reed and race for the Baxter Building. When they arrive at the Baxter Building, they find the New York City Police Department has cordoned off the area and are waiting for Reed to just give them the green light so they can join the assault on Doom. Reed tells the police to only go in if the Fantastic Four fails. Reed, Sue, and Johnny enter the lobby and are immediately under attack by their own headquarters defense apparatus, which is now under Doom's control. While Doom is distracted with the trio in the lobby, Daredevil sneaks in through one of the windows and attacks Doom with a whip-like nylon cable. Soon Daredevil must go on the defensive as Doom launches a miniature remote-controlled liquid-fueled rocket at him. Daredevil's ability to dodge almost leads Doom to suspect the true nature of Daredevil's radar ability. Meanwhile, Reed, Sue, and Johnny are reunited with Ben, and they take the elevator up to their headquarters. Doom realizes their plan and tries to kill them by detonating the car, but the Fantastic Four manage to escape, thanks to Daredevil's continued interference. Just as Doom is about to finish Daredevil, the Fantastic Four minus Reed arrive. Doom easily tosses aside Johnny and Ben, but this has given Reed enough time to retrieve the stimulator that he used on the Skrull homeworld. Reed uses the stimulator on himself, Sue, and Johnny to restore their powers. Doom tries to incapacitate the group with a freezing device, but Reed manages to rupture a steam valve, which destroys the floor refrigeration unit. As Doom flees, Reed uses the last of the stimulator's energy on Ben, and despite his protests, Ben is once again transformed into the Thing. Ben takes off after Dr. Doom, before Doom can modify the power units of Reed's mighty nuclear devices and turn them into a deadly weapon that will destroy everything in sight. Furious over his recent transformation, the Thing attacks Doom, surviving the impact of his fist on Doom's 100,000 megavolt force field. Doom staggers the Thing with his instant hypnosis impulse and pounds away on the Thing by increasing the force of gravity with his miniaturized sensitizer. The Thing's rage pushes him on, and he ultimately overcomes Doom's weapons. He crushes Doom's hands and then disables all the devices on his armor with brute force. With Doom humiliated and defeated, the Fantastic Four allows Doom to limp away as he's protected by diplomatic immunity. With the battle over, Ben has had enough. Ben is through being the fall guy for the group. He tells them that they divvy up the glamour, but he's still the Thing. He gets the short end of the whole deal, and he's still the Thing. They get married, but not him. They can be normal, but not him. Ben is through. He's done with the group, and he's quitting the Fantastic Four. Never to rejoin them again, right, Paul? Because I've only gone up to issue 50. I don't know what's coming.
Well, of course, that's it. Anytime anybody quits something, they're done.
They're called in the next issue the Magnificent Trio.
So, being a little less enamored with the Fantastic Four than I, let me start off by asking you, what did you think of this? How did you take this story when you first read it?
I mean, it's an exciting story. I don't remember the issue before the issue we started with, where they lost their powers. But I'm gathering.
I don't think they show them losing the powers. I didn't reread the prior issue in order to prep for it, but I think the issue ends with there's the explosion and right. She uses her force field and like you figure they're going to survive, but that's all you know.
Right.
I don't even know, the final panel may have shown them on the raft and shown Ben in his human form so that you'd know. It might've been something like that. But anyway, there wasn't an exploration of the fact that they had lost their powers. That doesn't come till this issue 39.
But it's an interesting concept that they have to make do as regular folks to fight this superpowered villain.
They also have the concern about, you know, if their enemies find out about their lack of power, they're going to seize on the moment to attack them.
Right, which is the plot of a lot of superhero comics, frankly.
Yeah, true. I think it's well done. First of all, you know, I commented on the art that, you know, this was like the beginning of Kirby's, you know, this is early in his becoming more of his own man and kind of advancing the house style. And I think that that doesn't truly become noticeable until Joe Sinnott comes on as his anchor. I think that's what really just makes it flourish. You know, we have Frank Giacoia doing issue 39, and we have Vince Coletta doing issue 40. And if you haven't heard our diatribes on Vince Coletta, you know he's famous for, you know, erasing things if he didn't have enough time to get it done. And, you know, getting the book out on time was more important than his artistic integrity. So, you know, I think the art in these two issues is very good, but I think it gets even better as we go along. And when Joe Sinnott joins, that's really what just sets it free, kind of.
No, the art is good. You know, I've said before, I'm not a big Jack Kirby fan, but this is good. I like this art. The thing that I find most disturbing about the whole story is the thing that Reed just takes it, but you know, if he had a big conversation with Ben and, you know, you need to do this for yada, yada, yada. But the fact that he just, we need you and shoots him with the thing up, you're a monster again. You know, there's like, I have so many issues with that. You know, it's that whole, if he wants to come to Jesus moment, so to speak, and go, all right, I see, I got to do this, and then be upset about it, that's fine. But the, oh, you don't get a choice, that I got a problem with.
Yeah, and I think that's actually a good thing story-wise. It gives you less respect for Reed and how he handles it. But it shows some human frailty. It shows conflict, and it creates something, you know, angst for the future. I think, you know, from a storytelling point of view, it's right out of, you know, storytelling ABCs. You know, you gotta, it's funny, you know, I talk with my wife about this all the time. Like, we watch TV shows and she gets upset, like when they show somebody cheating on their spouse, or you know, when somebody just does something that's, you know, wrong. And yeah, you're supposed to be bothered by that. That's part of the storytelling. But you have to understand that when you're watching a show that's going to have 10 or 12 seasons, you can't just have every episode be, yes, they're so happy. You know, you have to have conflict or you don't have a story. So, you know, I get that. And I can even, you know, I like the fact that I think you can make an argument for both sides on this, you know, for why Reed felt it was necessary, or even though I think he jumped, you know, no pun intended, he jumped the gun a little. But then, you know, if you follow the Fantastic Four in the future enough, you go through moments where, you know, Reed is constantly bothered trying to cure Ben. And then, you know, Ben wants to cure and he's so upset over being the thing. And then he gets the cure and he's upset because he feels like he's now useless. You know, it goes back and forth. So, you know, you can only tell the story so many times before it becomes a little hackneyed, but it's been told many times.
I also think the name Stimulator is a poor name for. I'm going to go use the stimulator on myself.
What did you think in issue 39 of the splash page where he does kind of the pop art thing where he has the photograph, black and white photograph with, you know, the four members of the team, yes, superimposed over it, drawn on it?
I like when he does that. He's done that before.
Oh, yeah.
He'll do it since. I don't know why. I get a kick out of that. I like it. I know some people don't like that. I like it.
I think the thing that I don't like about it is the fact that the background is all in black and white. I think if there were color added to it, I'd probably feel more comfortable that it fit the story. But it's so jarring because of that, that it takes me out of the story a little bit. It's almost like it's saying, hey, let me emphasize the fact that this is a comic book.
Yeah, I know. I can understand what you're saying. I like it that way, though. I don't know what it is.
I definitely have a lot of respect for the fact that he was experimenting and trying to do things differently.
See, I almost think if you put a color photograph in there, it becomes, then it looks like color forms almost. Do you know what I mean? Where
yeah.
you have
yeah, that's
a real background and just the figures drawn in.
There, it might be something where they played around with it, tried color, tried tinting, and found that this was the most acceptable way. And as far as that goes, like what he's got pictures of here, I don't even know. But it looks to me like he's taken pictures of a dozen different things and then somehow combined them into one image.
It looks like something out of Flash Gordon. You know what I mean? Like a machine mm-hmm. from the 30s.
And then like directly, you know, Ben is shown facing to the right. So to the left side of the photograph, where there's some sort of a machine that seems to have crackling energy coming out of it. Mm-hmm. I think that energy is hand-drawn into it.
Oh, see, I didn't know that.
I don't yeah. know that. I'm speculating.
I think you're right. It's very creative, I have to say that.
Yeah, and I totally respect that.
I want to say I think I saw this for the first time in one of the early issues, either of this or I think the Silver Surfer, something like that, where he had this photograph in the background.
Probably you saw it in both, would be my guess.
There you go.
And the Silver Surfer wasn't introduced until issue 47. So that's still, you know, a couple of months away from this one. And if it was from the Silver Surfer's series, that was a couple of years away.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember, I think I read these maybe 10 years ago.
Sure.
Mine's not what it used to be. It's pre-COVID. You know, it was a different world back then.
I'm trying to see what issue of Daredevil were we up to when this came out? Does it have the checklist?
Because I was reading Fantastic Four. You know, all the main books in publication order.
Right.
And then I ran out of steam.
I'm just looking. They have the checklist. They don't have Daredevil listed on it. He might have been bi-monthly at the time. But if Spider-Man's up to issue 25, that's got to mean Daredevil is probably in single digits, I'm guessing.
Hang on one second.
And while you're looking for whatever you're looking for, I'll just comment that they mention in this story that in issue 2 of Daredevil, Matt Murdock takes on the Fantastic Four as clients. So that kind of correlates to the fact that they would call him here. The fact that they don't already have a backup plan should they be killed is kind of a little silly if you think about it, because of what they do on a regular basis, you would think they need to be a little bit more proactive as far as you know, watching out for themselves.
So you're saying there's no plan B. Daredevil at this time is up to book issue 8.
Okay, so he only had the red costume starting in issue 7.
It was yellow, right?
It was yellow and brown before that.
You notice that's the second character who started out with a yellow costume.
Who else are we talking about?
And Iron Man have a yellow costume?
Iron Man had a silver costume mm-hmm. in the first issue. Then he had a gold one. And then he had the eventually worked his way to the red and gold one that was kind of the iconic look.
Right, right. Yeah, so Daredevil is up to issue 8 and he just fought the Stilt Man.
Right. Yeah, so it's very early in Daredevil's run, which might mean they might have included him in here to try and give him some exposure in hopes of, you know, bumping the sales of his book. And I would imagine at this point, it was probably a bi-monthly release schedule. So that would explain why the checklist wouldn't have had him listed for this one. I love the cover of issue 39. I think it's one of the most iconic covers. Yeah. And it appears, you know, I read somewhere that Wally Wood inked all of Daredevil's appearances, but that everything else was inked separately. And from the looks of the cover, it almost looks like it's a different inker for Daredevil. The lines seem to be just a little bit thicker on him than they are on everybody else.
That's and a fantastic cover.
To be honest, I think everybody else looks superior to the way Daredevil looks. When you isolate him, he doesn't look quite as good as the picture on a whole looks.
I get a kick out of the billboard on the building, the MMMS Marching Society.
It's the Mighty Marvel Marching Society, which predated FOOM, which was Friends of Old Marvel, which I had a membership in that one back in the day. And issues of FOOM magazine now are apparently selling on eBay for quite a sum of money. I have one issue of it. I have the issue where they first introduced the new X-Men, and I see that's going for like big bucks. But there's other issues that had things in it, and I see them on eBay for hundreds of dollars. It's shocking to me because that was almost a throwaway at the time. But I guess that's why it's so expensive.
What was the subscription, like a quarter or something, and they sent you?
At the time, it was probably like $3 or something like that. And you got a magazine each month, and you got a couple of other little things, you know, maybe some stickers and a card or something like that. I don't even remember for sure. Unfortunately, the only thing I have is one of the magazines, which is sad because I did have more, but I don't know what happened to them.
Yeah. Hence the value.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. For the longest time, in issue 39, you know, they have the page where they show the issues coming out this month, and the issue of Spider-Man, they show issue 25. For the longest time, that was the earliest issue in my collection of Spider-Man. I've since gotten probably about 7 or 8 issues underneath that one, or lower, and, you know, earlier than that one. But like I said, for a very long time, that was it. I like the whole thing with, you know, Reed trying to duplicate their powers and them having difficulty doing it. It doesn't just automatically come to them. And it's well drawn, like the way they show the Thing robot moving. You can almost see in a still photo how clumsily it's moving.
Yeah.
I think that's a real good job by Kirby.
Now, the cover is really fantastic. It's almost if you really weren't paying attention, you would not notice that Ben is in the background controlling the robot.
Yeah. Yeah, and you'd wonder, you know, why would Daredevil be leading them, you know, when he's the least powerful of the five people there? So it's definitely got, you know, would have you intrigued. The whole storyline with Dr. Doom having been hypnotized and having to have this, you know, basically amateur, you know, take him out of the hypnosis, and then his outrage. You know, it's all really well done. The thing where Reed has those hydraulic arms, they eventually revisited that in, I'm going to say somewhere in like the 170s or 180s of the series, when Reed had lost his power again and he used them. Of course, from a physics point of view, Reed is so brilliant that he would come up with some sort of anti-gravity thing, but like when they show him really stretching long with them, from a physics point of view, there's no way you'd be able to hold that up and for it to work like that.
No. Yeah. Of all of them, if I were Johnny, I would be the least excited about putting this green suit on that's going to light up on fire.
Yeah, it's I'd be a little concerned. I find it very cartoony that Dr. Doom would put a you know, sky writing up that he's going to kill the Fantastic Four.
It would have been better if he did it on a broom.
Surrender the Fantastic Four. Right. I think it's an interesting touch where, you know, he's in control of their headquarters, and he's using Reed's inventions against them. So I thought that was kind of a cool touch. And then eventually he comes to the realization that they don't have their powers. And then we go to issue 40. I don't think the cover is nearly as iconic. I think it's a good cover, but I don't think it's, you know, if you're going to compare the two, I don't think it does the job.
No. It's an exciting cover, you know.
I don't like the brownish background color. I feel like it would pop more with something else there.
I almost thought it was red. Maybe and like it just aged poorly.
Maybe like a dark blue or something might make it pop more.
Mm.
And I do like the you know, the symbolic splash page with the giant Dr. Doom on top of the Baxter building and the other five all among the buildings, you know, at also giant size, leaning on the buildings, holding on to the buildings.
What it needed was little biplanes circling around them.
That would work. I don't remember ever seeing before or after this, and I could be wrong, but I don't ever remember seeing Daredevil having a gun in his billy club.
Well, I was unfamiliar. You know, I have limited knowledge of Daredevil. I know the billy club seems to have a lot of tricks to it, but I didn't know it fired a bullet.
Yeah, that was news to me. Ultimately, I guess, you know, it's Doom's own overconfidence that allows them to make their way in and regain their powers because he's toying with them in the beginning. I like that the thing comes right up and, you know, in his Ben Grimm form, comes right up and punches Doom.
I like they made it that the cops wanted to charge in there with them.
And then there's the, you know, the transformation back into the thing. It's not as well drawn as I would like, but it is very dramatic, just the same.
It, to me, it's tragic. You look at him with his face to the floor, and it's a tragic transform. You know, it's not a heroic transformation.
But then, with that tragedy, he's like emboldened, empowered, whatever it is, he just becomes a force that is not going to be messed with, and he just keeps coming at Doom no matter what until he puts him down, which I just think is great, the way, you know, he crushes his hands.
Yeah.
And then Doom slinks off. But then, you know, he should still have the I want to kill the Fantastic Four thing. You know?
Right. Right. Now that I'm done with Doom, come over here, Reed.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't remember where the next issue brings. It may be another one where, you know, the thing left and now he's being manipulated by someone to attack the team or something like that.
So basically, what does Latveria offer? I mean, okay. He's got diplomatic immunity, right?
Which I always hear the guy from Lethal Weapon 2.
Yes, the guy.
Every
the
time
end,
you say that.
Diplomatic immunity. I heard it's just been revoked. yeah, that's what I was thinking.
I hear that every time. The thing about Latveria, and eventually they fleshed out that country a little bit. You know, not too much, but a little bit to the point where, you know, Doom is definitely a despotic ruler, but he also the land has prospered under him, because they have a point in issue, I think it's issue 200, where there's a revolution and he's taken out and somebody else takes over and the whole country falls into, you know, abject poverty because of the way things are run without Doom there. And eventually the people call for Doom's return.
But it's a democracy. Everything's broke. They're a democracy now.
Yeah. But, so, you know, go ahead.
I get vibes of Lex Luthor when he was on that planet Lexor where the planet people all loved him.
Is that that's the one we were talking about where he fights with Superman, but Superman, yes, doesn't have his powers. And I just picked up that issue. If you saw, yes, I posted it. I couldn't resist it after we had discussed it. So, I don't know. Do we have anything else on this?
No, this was a lot of fun. You made a very, very good pick.
Yeah, well, these are, in my opinion, two classic issues. So let's do them one at a time. The cover on 39. like I said, I think everybody else is better done than DD. I think he's done a little bit more heavy-handed. But just the same, I think this is... I don't think it hurts it because of that. And I think it's a very iconic cover, and I'm going to give the cover an A+. The interior art, again, I see a lot of the growth of Kirby and how he's really starting to show his own style. But there's a couple of points where the inking isn't quite as good as what it could be. So I'm going to say a B+ on the interior art. And the story, a lot of fun. I'm going to say an A on the story. So issue 39, I'm giving it overall an A.
I really like the cover. I love Doom hovering in the background. I like the little details they put to it with the MMS poster. I like the, if you're not paying attention, you're not going to notice that it's Ben Grimm controlling robot thing. It's a home run for me. I'm giving the cover an A+ too. I'm a little higher on the interior art because, you know, I really like it, and I'm not a Kirby fan. And I do like the photo pop art stuff he threw in there, and I'm going to give the interior art a solid A. Story, A across the board. Great story. A lot of fun. Highly recommend. So an A.
Okay, moving on to issue 40. I'll let you go first on that since you did the synopsis.
The cover is dynamic. It's a lot of fun. It has our characters and definitely exciting poses. Let's put it that way. It's symbolic of what's in the book while not being an exact panel out of the book. And it would intrigue me to pick it up off the stand. This one's another home run. I'm going to give it an A-. It's just a step below the last issue. The interior art, for me, it holds the bar where it was, maybe even possibly slightly better. I enjoyed this one too. The interior art, I'm going to give it an A. And the story, it's a great story. It pulls at your heartstrings. It has excitement. It has action. And it has an ending where, for me, you sit there and you go, I don't know if that was the right thing to have been done. And I genuinely feel bad for Reed, Ben. Reed is a bit of a prick, to be blunt. If we're going to call it what it is. Story's an A. So I'm going to give this one overall an A as well. You got two home runs, Paul.
Okay, so I'm going to say the cover on this one isn't quite up to the level of the previous one, but still pretty dynamic. I'm going to say an A- on the cover. The interior art, I would say it might even be a slight step up from the previous issues. So I'm going to say an A on the interior art. And the story, like you said, I think it presents things in a good manner. I think it gives you some characterization and some angst. Overall, I think it's very good, and I'm going to say an A on the story and an A on the book.
Now people are going to go see they just agree with each other all the time.
Yeah, well, I'll disagree with you about something at some point, but not this one. So I kind of gave you my anticipation for the movie. What are you thinking? Are you going to be going out of your way to see this? Or
yes, waiting? I'm going to go see it as soon as it opens. By that weekend, I'll have it viewed. That's my plan. I'm excited about it. I get a kick out of it. It's like the comic. It takes place in New York, you know, from the 60s.
But it's an alternate New York, like a futuristic 60s world.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. And I know, you know, we were talking about, we recently did an Is It Yours on the Roger Corman Fantastic Four movie from 1994.
I've never even seen that.
And it's available on YouTube if you're interested in it. I mean, you have to definitely kind of squint a little bit as you watch it, but otherwise it's available. And but we were talking about anticipation for this one, and Scott had said something to the effect of he's a little concerned over the fact that it appears that the Fantastic Four will end this story unsuccessfully defending the world. And I'm I understand that, but I'm also thinking it's possible that they will be successful, and that they're, because spoilers, I'm sorry. It appears that this story will end and they'll be coming to the main Marvel MCU universe.
That's what I heard.
But that the story doesn't take place in the MCU universe. So I'm starting to wonder if maybe they are successful on their world, but then somehow get tricked into coming to ours, or that in order to be successful on their world, they have to come over somehow. Or, you know, there's ways of doing it. I am inclined to think that that's probably not the case, that they will be unsuccessful and that Galactus will somehow destroy their world.
That's Teresa's theory as well.
That's certainly the rumor, but I'm keeping an open mind to the fact that I don't really know what's going to happen yet. And I'm going to wait and see, but I'm excited for it. And, you know, Tina is well aware of it and she knows that we're going to see it.
Do you have tickets for that one yet?
Not yet, but we'll, I think what I'm going to do is, you know, we'll see Superman. We already have our tickets for that. And once we've seen that, we'll get tickets for this.
Very good.
One movie at a time. So that'll do it for our Fantastic Four score and 7 years ago. thanks everybody for listening. Thanks Dave for doing this with me. And we'll see you all next time. Bye-bye.
Always a pleasure. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiMonzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.